Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Tuning the Bow, a parenting discipleship podcast focused on the discipleship at YUP. My name is Matthew Wilbanks, and I'm here with my good friend, Tim Rose. Tim, out in West Texas, it was a relatively clear, wintry weekend, but here in DFW, it was the exact opposite.
Yeah. Out here, all we had to deal with was that it was cold. But it was like, it was perfectly sunny, nice outside. Just, you know, like freezing or lower. But yeah, you all had to deal with the real stuff. Have good snow, or did you have like the snow and ice mix or what?
It was good snow. It was powdery. It was powdery snow that wasn't too sticky. But it was still enough of a nuisance to make Texans go, well, I guess I can't open today. It was both nice and also kind of like, come on, guys, really. But yeah. Which happens once every winter in DFW to where it's just like, no, it's too cold. I was like, guys, it's cold, but it's not too cold. That's just, you know, Texans overreacting to the weather yet again.
Yeah, there were discussions out here about if we should delay school. I think some businesses delayed, and it ended up being one of those, like, it was a perfectly fine morning. It was just cold out. Like, I mean, I went to work out in the church and in the church gym. So I got here at like 7:30. I mean, it was cold outside. I hated that I was wearing shorts, but I walked the 4 steps from, you know, my parking spot into the door, and other than that, it was fine.
Yep. But it's how it is. And there's also a, you know, a giant cloud of gloom over at least the northern part of Texas, where the Dallas Cowboys were absolutely ripped to shreds by the Green Bay Packers. And down south in Houston, the Texans absolutely ripped to shred the Cleveland Browns.
Yes,
so
did.
It's a very one-sided affair.
Yeah, it was. Those were pretty rough games. You know, not at all competitive. Mm-hmm. But you know, at the end of the day, I don't see Houston being a team that's going to win the Super Bowl. And so as a North Texas person, not that I'm even a Cowboys fan, but as a North Texas person, we'll still have the championship because, you know, the Rangers are still the World Series champions.
Absolutely. And that's the beautiful thing about it. I was talking to my friend the other day, and I was like, for the next 20 years, no other DFW sports team can have success, and I will be content.
Yeah, the Rangers just bring joy like that, you know?
Yeah, they do. They do. But that kind of goes into what we are going to talk about. We're going to talk about something we haven't really addressed before, and both of us have plenty of experience in this, and we're going to talk about being disappointed or being let down and kind of what that looks like or should look like biblically, but often what it plays out as in our life. Now, Tim, we can go on and talk about the experiences we've had of being disappointed, but that wouldn't really help anyone because, well, really, most people have been disappointed at some point, but some really big disappointments happen all the time. Like for me, back at a previous job, I was, they were going to change some positions around, and I was pretty much told up front that I was not going to be considered with my workplace moving forward. And I had spent 3-4 years there, and it was really hard to hear that. So just being let down by my employer, and that is always a difficult thing. And Tim, for you, lots of different things have happened over the last, you know, 5 years or so. But I know for you, a lot of disappointment comes and letdown comes with something as big as something like a miscarriage. Yeah. Or something similar. And so we all have these moments in our lives where we feel as if God is either not big enough or he is not present in these moments. And our disappointment is normally taken out really on other people, and especially for parents, on our kids sometimes. And so, Tim, kind of looking at it that way, how has, number one, how has disappointment and letdown kind of shaped you into who you are today? But also, number two, what is something that's kind of helped you remain biblical through that process?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we look at this conversation in general, obviously Matt and I will both, you know, be the first to say, like, there are different forms, or maybe we should say there are different levels, if you will, of disappointing things, mm-hmm. you know, or things that that bring you down. Obviously, you know, the Cowboys losing, like, at this point in your life, that should be fairly normal, mm-hmm. Especially in the month of January. It really shouldn't take you down that much, because it is so normal of a thing. And we say that in jest, but there's one level of disappointment that there are often things in life that do frequently not meet our expectations. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, there's an element of this where time does the work of healing, even if not necessarily we've done all that much to get over it ourselves. But then there's also the varying degrees of disappointment based on the real things that actually happened. Mm-hmm. You know, although we all saw people on social media throwing their Cowboys jerseys in the trash, and, you know, their shrines to Mike McCarthy were being burned. Like, mm-hmm. that's not as sad. That's not as disappointing as the loss of a loved one. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what ridiculous things may be said, I think we all recognize that there's things that are more real. It doesn't mean that you're not disappointed in the Cowboys, but they're separate entities, and they're separate levels of importance. Yep. But that being said, as I've walked through these things, one thing that comes to mind immediately is, as a reminder, is first of all, the fact that we're not alone in our disappointment. We're not alone in the things that we deal with. Mm. You know, when you talk about, say, the loss of a loved one, you already have immediate comfort if that loved one is saved, if that, you know, they're eternally with God. But I'm also reminded of the fact that, you know, Christ experienced these very same things. Mm-hmm. Our God is not a God who fails to empathize with us. Our God is a God who has actually experienced the same sort of things, and therefore is able to actually comfort us. Mm. But then secondly, I think I'm reminded that, you know, I'm reminded of Ecclesiastes. Mm. I'm reminded that there is actually nothing new under the sun. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know about you, but often when I go through something, my knee-jerk sort of response and reaction is to almost have the fallacious viewpoint that I am the first person to have gone through this. Hmm. Because as I look around, or as I quickly ask, I don't immediately see anyone who has gone through it, and therefore this must be only against me. And then I start to ask those questions, well, why would it only be against me? But I think when we look back and we sit back and we realize, man, you're not the only person who have gone through this, and that because there is nothing new under the sun, that also means that, again, this is not even close to outside the realm of God's control. Mm-hmm. That reminds me to put my heart in a position that says, instead of saying, man, this is terrible, why doesn't God do anything, I just instead sit back and say, wait a minute, God is probably doing something. I just have to figure out what it is.
Yep.
I mean, even through the loss of a child, it was like, okay, wait, what's God doing here? Mm-hmm. There's got to be something that's happening, because God doesn't do things aimlessly. He's not just a, you know, oh, whatever sort of God. Then he must have a purpose. But Matt, how about you tell me about those same questions.
I always like to be aware and know what's going on. So there are lots of times when I try to do things, set myself up to do these things, and well, I end up being disappointed in the sense of, Tim, what you mentioned earlier is unmet expectations. And these expectations we have for God sometimes are unmet, but that's only because, well, our expectations aren't biblical expectations. We expect God to be everywhere all at once, getting us exactly what we need right at the right moment. And sometimes in his sovereign will, that is simply not the case. In the sense, for me, when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old, my father walked out on my family. And though I have always had a good relationship with him, that really struck me from a very young age of what expectations I should have for a father should be. And I had to learn from scratch, really, at the age of around 4 or 5 years old. And the things that I had, the expectations I had for my dad to always be there, were suddenly now gone. And that affects me even still today, that I, there are lots of things, if you are listening to this episode and you are currently struggling in your marriage, the first thing I have to tell you is, go absolutely straight to God with it. Bring everything you have before the Lord and lay it at his feet. And second is to seek help from godly counsel, whether it be your pastor, your pastor's wife, if you're a lady. There are many, many resources out there to help you. We try to post them as often as we can in the episode descriptions, but we have to realize that sometimes unmet expectations are just a reality. And what often I do in response is not very biblical, and it's kind of get upset and think, oh, my least favorite game that I play, but the game I play most often, is the what if game. What if I had done this? What if I had spent more time doing this? What if I had said this instead? What if I didn't go there, but I instead went over here? Like, we can play that game all day long, but it won't change the outcome of what is currently happening. And what we need to do is we need to say, Lord, what is it that I'm supposed to do now? And that's the same question that, Tim, you have asked in the past. It's like, what does this mean? What am I supposed to do with this? So what I want to do is I want to, very quickly, first off, I want to take a quick stop in Psalm chapter 13. This is becoming one of my favorite chapters in the book of Psalm. It's one of David's where he just lays his heart out. And oftentimes in scripture, the authors will ask questions and then they will answer their own questions. But as we'll see in a minute, it's a little different sometimes. But in here, I want to just read the whole chapter and kind of talk through it a little bit. Starting in verse 1 of Psalm 13, "How long, Lord, will you forget me? How long will you hide your face from me? How long will I store up anxious concerns within me, agony in my mind every day? How long will my enemy dominate me? Consider me and answer, Lord my God. Restore brightness to my eyes. Otherwise, I will sleep in death. My enemies will say, I have triumphed over him, and my foes will rejoice because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your faithful love, and my heart will rejoice in your deliverance. I will sing to the Lord because he has treated me generously." I think whenever we come across disappointment and let down, we can often feel like David in the first 4 verses. And we often don't go through the thought process of getting to verses 5 and 6 and reminding ourselves that God has led me so far up until this point. Why will he just all of a sudden abandon me when I suffer hardship and trial? but instead my heart will rejoice in his deliverance. I will sing to the Lord because he has treated me generously. Tim, what comes to mind when you read through this chapter? What are some things that really pop out to you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, to me, I begin with the end. Like, I will sing to the Lord because he has treated me generously. Like, it not that we are ever in the business of saying, hey, you change a mindset, this is automatically going to change what happens.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, having a different mindset than just the classic pessimistic, oh, woe is me sort of tactic does allow you to see minor graces of God.
Hmm.
You know, currently I'm preaching through a series on Jonah. And one of the things that, as I looked at the book, that I've noticed is, like, God's not just gracious to Jonah like once.
Hmm.
Like, he's gracious to Jonah a lot in that book.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to chapter 4 and Jonah's, you know, having his little pity party saying, I'd rather die than, you know, have to watch the Ninevites be saved. And God says, hey, shouldn't I care a lot more about the Ninevites than a plant? Like, the question is sitting there, because if you look back, you go, man, at every single turn, God has been gracious.
Hmm.
Like, as I read this psalm, yes, you obviously hear the heartbreak, you hear the disappointment, you hear the questions. But then you hit verse 5, and it's one of those big butts of the Bible, like, but I have trusted in your faithful love, my heart will rejoice in your deliverance.
Mm-hmm.
I will sing to the Lord. You know, I'm reminded there of the confession of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, of, hey, even if God doesn't save us, we're only going to worship him.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an element of this that we don't even yet understand the faith that those guys have, much less the faith that God really wants us to have.
Mm.
Because we sit here and we say, like, oh man, the Cowboys lost and you know, I've had difficult news today twice. Is God even there?
Mm.
And it's like, whoa, hold on there, Cowboy. Like, those aren't nearly as significant as what's going on in the life of David or in the life of numerous people of the Bible. And yet they're sitting here firmly saying, yeah, I've trusted in the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God is faithful. I think when we enter bad situations, we must remind ourselves that in history past until the very moment that we're in, God has always been faithful.
Yep.
Therefore, if he's been faithful for hundreds and thousands of years, then odds are he'll be faithful again.
Mm.
But Matt, what's the next passage you want to look at? Because I know you have one more.
Yeah, the next one is actually an entire book. This was something that my pastor brought up this past Sunday. And as I was stirring in my head about what to talk about this week, I was reminded of this. And it's important that we look at this, and it's the book of Habakkuk. Now, Habakkuk was a prophet who was in the thick of it as Israel was going to be, or is currently being dominated by Babylon, or excuse me, the Judah in the southern kingdom was being absolutely wrecked by Babylon. Habakkuk was, again, in a much more dire situation than a lot of things that we are. But just to say that very quickly, in a way to kind of bring it in, practically speaking, if your child has an issue that's completely wrecking them, take it seriously for a moment. Like, actually get in their shoes and think, why is this wrecking them? Is there anything I can do to kind of help them see what's going on? And sometimes the answer to both of those questions is you can't really get in their shoes and understand, and there's really nothing that you can say to help them in that situation. So, for instance, Maybe you have your kid has a favorite YouTube or Twitch streamer, and they suddenly say, "Hey, I'm going to stop producing content," and that like really wrecks them. Like, it's a silly thing, of course, in the same way that growing up, whenever your favorite TV show was canceled, there is a point where you feel disappointed in that, again, you had these expectations that were not met. But the worst thing you can do is trivialize your child's problem and say, well, it's just not that big of a deal. Like, obviously, sports, you can totally trivialize that. It really isn't that big of a deal. But for our kids, we have to take a bit of a gentler or a more gentle, I guess the gentler is not technically a word, but a more gentle approach to really show the love of God to them. And then if they continue to hem and haw in it, then obviously you want to say, God, you got to wake up. Like, you need to understand that this shouldn't affect you forever because it is just a little thing happening. So I just wanted to say that very quickly before we continued. Do take your kids' problems seriously, but the other side of it is don't let them stay in those problems for too long, because then it will become something that is overblown and overdramatic, and they need to be brought to reality. But Habakkuk was a prophet living in the midst of Babylon's attack on Judah, and he kind of starts off the book the same way that David started off Psalm 13, starting in verse 2. How long, Lord, must I call for help and you do not listen, or cry about violence and you do not save? Why do you force me to look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Oppression and violence are right in front of me, and strife is ongoing. The conflict escalates. This is why the law is ineffective. And justice never emerges, for the wicked restrict the righteous. Therefore, justice comes out perverted. Now, this is something that a lot of people deal with. They look at the issues and the real issues going on in the world, and they say, see, this is why God does not exist, because evil is everywhere. That's not what Habakkuk is saying here, but it is very, very close. Look at verse 4. This is why the law, God, your law, is ineffective, because people can never get it right, and justice never emerges, for the wicked restrict the righteous. Therefore, justice comes out perverted. And sometimes people will look at their situations and go, see, this is why I know there is no God, because I am suffering. And that is simply not true. Sin is the issue. But sin is also something that we constantly really strive towards in our life. We all have our sinful inclinations, and we would much rather be doing those things rather than doing the work of the Lord, because doing good is actually a difficult thing. You can see that even in Habakkuk's cry. He wants to do the right thing, but it is hard and it's difficult. So he cries out to the Lord, why aren't you here? I thought you were supposed to be here for us and protect us. And that's even what he said in other prophets in the law. And then God gives an answer in verse 5. Look at the nations and observe, be utterly astounded, for I am doing something in your days that you will not believe when you hear about it. Really, that's it. We can continue to go through the rest of the book of Habakkuk, but I think oftentimes in our disappointment, we end up trying to play the role of God and saying, if only this outcome happened, everything would be okay. And we simply don't know if that's true or not. We cannot say that if this happens, then this will happen with 100% certainty. The only thing we know and the only thing we can experience is what is currently happening now. We can think about what has gone on in the past, but that's just how God works. He knows what's happening. He knows what is going on. And he has a reason why it's happening. And the rest of this book really is Habakkuk's dialogue with the Lord. Luckily, we have this for us, and so you can read this in your own time and kind of see the way that Habakkuk moves. But it's important to realize that sometimes when your kids don't meet your expectations, do not take it out on them. When your family has these things that they, you need to live up to, but you just can't keep it up because maybe your kids aren't what your parents thought they would be. They're the kids' grandparents. They're disappointed in them, and it's your fault because you didn't raise them right. Like, there's so many outside things that can affect how we feel, and these things can make or break our faith if we let them. But we have to do what God talked to Cain about in Genesis chapter 4, that if sin is crouching at the door and its desire is for us, we must control it. We must control our desires. We have the ability to do that, actually, through the power of the Holy Spirit. If Christ is Lord of your life and the Holy Spirit has changed you to be made new, according to 2 Corinthians 5:17, you have the ability to control your desires. But it's those outside things that we cannot control that often dictate how we feel. So, Tim, what are some practical things that can help us when we are tempted to think like Habakkuk or act like David, when we feel that God is completely outside of us and there's nothing we can do, and the way Habakkuk was looking, even if we should follow the Lord, if that is what is good, what are some practical things to kind of help us when we get in these moments?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, man, this is going to sound mean. You're normally the mean sounding one, not me. But the first thing, as lovingly and as kindly as I can put, is like, cut out the pity party.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it again, remember Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. You're not the first person. You probably won't be the last person to go through this. Then secondly, it is to be reminded that as much as you might want to think that, well, it'd be way better if God's going to do it this way. It'd be far better if, you know, if God would listen to what I have to say. I would remind you of, well, God's own son, Jesus. As he says, hey, Lord, if you could take this cup and pass it somewhere else, like, I really don't want to go on the cross. And yet, I think we all know how that story ended. Like, there was only one way, and that was the way. I think it's also important to remember, as you go through these things, that there are things in life that are disappointing that are outside of our control. There are also things in life that are disappointing that we're completely in our control.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, lots of times when I talk to parents, what I hear is, you know, disappointments coming from our children. And that's real. I'm not saying that's not real. You did have an option to parent them.
Mm.
You had decisions that you could make. Now, am I saying that kids always do everything by the way that their parents did? No. But, like, one of the best things we can do anytime we run into something we don't like is to begin to ask ourselves, what did I do to get myself here? Then if the answer to all of those questions is, I didn't do anything to get here, then the next question we ask is, okay, if I didn't do anything to get here, then that means that God was the one who orchestrated this to happen. So now I have to ask myself, does God have greater purposes than I do?
Mm.
And if you can't figure that out, the answer is yes. But then if you're sitting there, you're saying, okay, well, that's fine, Tim. That might have gotten me an ideological way out of this, but what do I do? What do I do now? Well, then I might remind you of Micah 6:8. Mm. I might say to you, well, he's already told you what is good. But to love mercy, to do justly, and to walk humbly with the Lord your God.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like the humble part of the walking. Most of us, if, you know, something bad happens, we're fine still treating people with mercy and justice. That's fine. But we don't want to walk humbly. Like, try all three. If you try all three simultaneously, you'll begin to see God's picture unfold, because God is actually frequently in the business of showing off what his design is, but he really likes to show off his design to people who trusted him.
Mm-hmm.
And the second we take back our trust, because now it's our ability to trust is conflicting with what we want in the world. Well, we have to resituate ourselves and say, nope, my job is to walk humbly with God. But Matt, what do you have?
Yeah, in these moments, it is, we have to remind ourselves, like the end of Job, where Job realizes he's said all these complaints before the Lord, and God simply answers with, do you know how big this universe is? Do you know everything that's going on? Do you realize that I work through the entire universe, and I know exactly what you're doing and what you're going through? Like, I tell this to my students all the time, is we have to recognize God's bigness and our smallness. We have to remember we are not the worst thing going on right now. And we have to not only remind ourselves this, but we have to remind our kids, if God is in control, he is in complete control. Not just a little control. He is in complete control. And I was doing a study through the book of Esther with my students, and I came across this verse in the study, and it has really helped shape in my mind just exactly how God works. And I think I've mentioned it before, but I want to bring it up again, and it's Proverbs 16:33. The die is cast into the lap, or the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. We have to remember that things just don't happen without God knowing about them. These seemingly random coincidences are still under the complete control of the Lord. And it's through this that we have to remember God's bigness and our smallness. In these moments, we are not the center of the universe. What is going on? Why should we take a step back and consider it from God's perspective? Because that'll help us to realize, man, I really am insignificant. But God still loves me enough to care about my hurt. And we have to teach that to our kids as well, that in the moments when our kids will go through breakups, when they will not make the team for whatever thing, whether it be cheerleading, whether it be football, basketball, or even something like being on, you know, in the theater club and getting the role they wanted. Like, these things aren't just out there and God doesn't care about us. Now, God took the time to talk to Job. He took the time to talk to Habakkuk, and he took the time to bring to David's mind about all the things that God has done in the past. Like, we have to remember that if it is something as earth-shattering, maybe, as it is an international conflict, or something smaller like a breakup, God still cares about us. And we have to not only say and remind that to our kids, but we have to remind that to ourselves as well, that God still loves you so much that he gave his son to die on the cross for you, that through Jesus' resurrection, we can have eternal life and peace in the midst of suffering, not in place of, but in the midst. And this is something that will not only help you in your parenting, but it'll also help your kids as they grow up and then possibly eventually become parents themselves. That's all I have to say. Just remember that the Lord is on his throne and he is the one who is over all things. Tim, do you have any last minute remarks?
No, I don't think so.
Sick. Well, that's the end of this episode. I'm still very sniffly, and I need to stop talking because it's almost time to me for me to catch my next class.
Fun.
It's the new semester, and it brings all the fun. So this has been Tuning the Bow. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see y'all in the next episode. Bye, everybody.
Meh.